Future-Proof Extra from Newstalk.
AI can do so many things better than we can when it comes to calculating something or sifting through a huge amount of data at breakneck speeds. There's no competition between us and the robots. And yet they're pretty useless at so many of the simple things we take for granted that even a toddler can do. But perhaps that's because we haven't taken the time to teach them the same way we do our infants. Mark Lee is Emeritus Professor of Intelligent Systems in the Department of Computer Science at Aberystwyth University and author of How to Grow a Robot, Developing Human-Friendly AI. He joins me now. Welcome to the program, Mark. This is the sort of the age-long pursuit, isn't it, of people who are interested in AI and just finding a way to make it think more like humans.
Yes, definitely. I mean, most AI is designed for a particular task, but human beings are much more flexible than that. We have general purpose. We can adapt quickly to other tasks. The problem that most AI systems have is that they don't really understand what they're doing. So they can recognize faces or drive cars and so on, but they don't know what a car is or what a face really is. And that's the problem with robotics, that robotics needs an understanding of the objects it's dealing with and the world that it lives in to develop a sort of common sense about the world in order that it can understand properly the meaning of the objects it's dealing with.
Yeah. So if we think about machine learning, say, for example, recognizing the picture of a cat, you can give a whole lot of pictures of a cat to a computer and it'll start recognizing, oh, these have similar shapes like a whiskers and their eyes seem to be a particular type of way, but it doesn't really know anything beyond the similarities in the data because it doesn't have the context of human experience.
That's quite right. I mean, these are usually deep data learning programs that are fed huge amounts of data. So they learn a lot about the differences between different cat faces, but you can't ask them and say, what are the components of a cat? It doesn't know anything about actually what a cat is.
So there are sort of many branches of AI, I suppose, but there are a sort of machine learning branches and then there's the developmental approach to AI. Can you maybe give us a bit of history as to how AI has evolved into these different strands before we talk about your particular interest, which is developmental?
Well, it's got a long history, yes. It started way back in the 50s and went through various stages of expert systems and knowledge-based systems and all sorts of commercial things in the 80s and 90s. In the 1950s and 60s, they were trying to develop general-purpose learning systems, but they didn't get very far and had a lot of trouble. They were trying to recognize diagrams and learn language and things like that, and there were a lot of failures. And then they got into expert systems where they tried to learn what experts know. So they'd interrogate an expert and write a rule base of all the things that the expert told them. So if you're controlling a power station or something, you say, if this particular dial goes into the red, you turn this valve down and you turn that lever up and so on.
Yeah.
And those became very commercial and everybody made a lot of money then, or some people did. And it seemed okay, but then they had a lot of failings because the expert, of course, is very good at dealing with outliers, the unusual cases that nobody knows how to deal with. And you can't code everything from an expert's brain. And then it went on into statistical learning, where we learn the regularities from a lot of data by looking at them and collecting the statistics to show which is the most likely output. And more recently, deep learning has been processing huge amounts of data from Google and all the other companies that collect it to get systems that give us adverts and good search methods and lots of services of various sorts. But again, as we just mentioned with the cat example, they don't really know what they're doing. And when you get to robotics and you're trying to build a robot that is, say, acting as an assistant to somebody in a home, perhaps, then it has to understand all the objects that it's dealing with. It has to know what it's doing. And developmental robotics is a very recent, this century, development of a group of researchers who are looking at how humans develop, and the key being in infants, and the way that infants start off with absolutely nothing and gradually become very competent at handling all the events in the world that we want robots to do.
I suppose if you master something like this, then a very intelligent robot would come about. Certainly a robot that was able to make decisions based on the things put in front of it and on its life experience. But to do that, you sort of have to nurture this child as if it were a real one. You need to recreate the constant stimulation and environment that you would for an infant. Is that honestly what you're trying to achieve? Trying to create a robot baby?
That's the idea, but not literally like that, because we can't do that exactly. But what we can do is run some experiments on a robot trying to copy the behavior that infants have and trying to learn algorithms from that do help robots to learn on their own and learn this common sense that they need so that they can understand the world around them.
So how does developmental AI, this sort of very natural idea of learning by experiencing, how does that work exactly?
Well, we spend a lot of time studying infant psychology, developmental psychology, and looking at how infants actually work, so to speak. And of course, a newborn baby has no maturity of its muscles. It can't move or do very much at all on its own, but it can move its eyes, and it learns to fixate on interesting objects with its eyes. And then after a few months, it can roll its neck around and then correlate its neck movement with its eye movement. And gradually, its muscles mature and it can do more and more. And the sensory system of the baby is also very limited. It's just like a tunnel vision when it first starts, just enough to see the mother when feeding. And this gradually widens as well. And we think that the constraints of the immaturity actually are helpful because it allows you to learn one thing at a time, the control of the eyes, the control of the hands and the arms, the intercorrelation between them, eye and hand coordination, and so on. So we can build systems that promote this sort of behavior in our robots and try and duplicate the behavior. Because we can't get inside the child's brain, we don't know what's going on there, but we can try and copy the behavior, and that gives ideas about how the learning might progress.
But, I mean, the crucial flaw in this approach to me is that the thing directing all of this movement, decision-making, looking, seeing, and learning is the brain. And, of course, it's an enormous, unreplicable mass of neurons, a giant neural network that we couldn't possibly recreate, let alone attach to sensors to recreate the stimulus of the outside world, light, sound, smell, and so on. So right. It's very limited in what it can do. How can you really say that it's learning if it doesn't have all those things?
Well, we're not going from a neuroscience point of view. I mean, some people are trying to build simulations of the brain, but we're not doing that. We're interested in the physical behavior that's observed from the infant and how this grows in stages. I mean, it's very familiar to parents that their child, each week, they'll say, oh, we can do another skill this week. It's found another way of doing this.
You haven't met my kids. It seems to me they're losing the ability to do things, but anyway.
Well, certainly in the first year, anyway, you'll see that. But if you know, the idea is that we can make the learning system open-ended, so it's stimulated by the objects it sees, and it gives attention to things that it sees, and interacts with them. So after it's got sort of 6 months development, it can reach out with its arm to pick up an object that the eye has seen, and manipulate that object, feel the shape. It's got, our robot has got tactile fingers, and get the experience of this particular object and notice things that it, like, for example, it drops when you let go of it, which is gravity, and the way it rolls off the table if it's round. So all these all these events in the world can be experienced by the robot and learned, you see.
This robot you're talking about, the iCub, can you describe it? What does it look like?
Yes, it's a small humanoid robot made in the shape of a human, but it's about a three-year-old child in size, about over a meter high, about 25 kilograms. It's got a face with eyes, which have got cameras in it, and eyelids, microphones for ears. It can sense the movements of its arms, the positions and where its body is. And it's got touch sensors in the skin and especially in the hands. It was made in Genoa in Italy, funded by the European Commission, and they made a bit of foresight there. They thought, well, this would be a good research tool, and they made about 30 of them, and they're distributed across European universities.
Right. So this robot three-year-old boy that can look around, touch and feel things, you're saying it can learn. How do you code for learning? Because I get the if this, then that approach to robotics. That makes sense to me. How do you code for open experience? What does that even look like?
Well, we take all our ideas from biology that are compatible with what's known about infants. And the key thing is correlations between everything, often called suspicious coincidences. When things occur together, this is a very good indication that they're connected. So we use novelty as a driver. Anything that's new is of interest to the robot. It gives attention to that.
Right.
And anything that correlates with things. So it just learns these correlations, and it gradually, through experience, finds out the way things look with their color and size and shape through the eyes, the way they feel with the size of the grasp of the object and the texture, and the way objects act. That is, when you poke them, if they move or if they don't move, or what the weight and so on. So all these things are learned as the sort of physics of the world out there. And that's what infants do. They definitely discover the properties of objects, such as the persistence of objects, that if you cover them up, they're still there underneath the cover.
Object's permanence, isn't that what it's called? Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you've been teaching iCub and sort of using this developmental approach, this three-year-old robot that looks like a little boy, what age would you imagine this child to be at developmentally, having worked with it for the few years you have?
Well, it's quite hard work. I mean, an important thing is to start at the beginning. You have to start when it's got no skills at all and let it build up its own structures. So we start basically at birth. And we've at about 9 months, it can it's attracted to objects, it picks them up and it plays with them. And we're about at that point, about 9 months.
Wow. I mean, that may not sound like a lot, but developmentally, a 9-month-old can do a lot.
Well, yes. And of course, it takes about a couple of hours to run the robot to get from zero to that.
Wow. Because it's learning and it's not following a set series of rules, has it ever surprised you in the environment it's been let to run free?
Yes, it has. One case was where it had learned to pick up objects, and it could put one object on top of another. These are usually blocks and toys and things, you know. And we have a little test bench where it can press buttons and lights come on. That was for a different experiment with the Italian people. And one day it picked up a block and carried it over to a button and pressed the button with the block. And we hadn't programmed that at all. That was just a consequence of trying out different things. I should say that the main algorithm, if you like, to drive it at this stage is play. So infants spend ages playing with things. They try different permutations and see what happens to objects, what the consequences of different actions are. And that's how you learn a lot about the physical world.
If you take this to a logical point, are we talking about sentient AI, a robot that has feelings, that that has maybe not a consciousness, but if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, is that where we are?
Well, I wouldn't say consciousness. No, I don't think we need that, actually.
But do you think that could be something we get if we keep going down the road of development of robotics?
It's very debatable, that is. But what I would say is we do need self-awareness. The robot needs to understand what it's doing, and that implies it sees itself as part of the world.
Yeah.
So if I want to pick this up and move it over there, I've got to go myself. You know, you've got to figure out all the different things that you do in the plan. And the robot needs that as well.
So if we think of, you know, HAL as being very, very far away, and this robot being the first step towards, I suppose, a self-aware robot, what do you see the next 5 or 10 years heralding in terms of moving along this path of developmental AI?
Well, yeah, what I describe in the book is things that can be done in the future, and that I'm sure they're possible, because there is a lot of the research has been done already in different ways. And getting towards better social interaction, that's what I see as the real future for it. Hopefully, you'll be able to have a robot that understands a conversation with somebody and knows that it's another person. It knows itself is a robot, but it is an agent, and can continue conversations like that, and when they break off and come back and remember the person and their history and so on. Mm. So that would be very useful in the sort of home assistant thing where, you know, the robot goes into the other room, into the kitchen, and brings a cloth back, and you say, why did you do that? And it said, well, I noticed you spilt some of your drink on the floor, and last time we used a cloth, you know.
Yeah.
That sort of reasoning.
That's possible, but
yeah,
but a romantic relationship is just sadly beyond reach.
Well, people get very carried away with what robots can do, and yeah, of course they're not living beings, so the idea of them being switched off isn't a problem to them. They can be switched back on again, you know. They're not going to worry about life and death, and so most of the survival things and the emotional things that we worry about, that it's not a concern. But then I don't see any reason why a platonic companion shouldn't be very useful anyway.
I'm going to finish with this question, which is obviously a projection, just your gut reasoning on it. But when we look at biology, you know, it's clear that the evolution of our sentient species came from, you know, simple cells, and beyond that, a mix of minerals, heat, and pressure. So the idea that consciousness cannot come from inanimate objects doesn't wash with me. Would you imagine that we might ever get to a stage where sentient emotional AI would not understand that it isn't alive? Is that, I know it's a sci-fi scenario, but I always like to get people who work in this industry thoughts on it.
Well, it's a very philosophical question.
Yeah.
Whether we could ever get to consciousness. It's very debatable. And I think most AI people consider it not a question we could work on at the moment. But if we did get a conscious machine, it would certainly know that it was a machine and not a biological machine. Mm. And therefore it would understand that it was a robot, and it would presumably be quite useful without being a threat.
Yeah, or I was actually less worried about being attacked by the robots and more worried about robots being bummed out that they were robots. You know, so the robot realizes that it's just a machine, but has an idea of what a conscious, natural consciousness is.
Well, it possibly could. I mean, it's an open question, and it's bordering on science fiction.
No, it really is, and I totally get that. And you're quite right to stay 6 feet away from that question. If you'd like to see a picture of iCub, the 3-year-old robot with a 9-month-old's brain, you can check out our Twitter page. It's twitter.com/newstalkscience. Mark Lee, author of How to Grow a Robot, Developing Human-Friendly AI. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.